Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakryason. Construction and road improvements by the Colorado Department of Transportation will delay motorists up and down Highway 82 this summer. But those who are coming in and out of Aspen got a little reprieve this month with the delay on the improvements at the S-curves.
So it sounds like they're going to move it. We don't have an exact date yet, but it's going to be sometime in August. You would like to think that they'll have it done before August 14th.
And with Twin Lakes full, water is being released into the Roaring Fork River this week, fueling an already intense spring runoff. Authorities are urging caution.
You can't just shut off the water and walk away from it. You've got to wait it out.
The Silt couple is accused of embezzling around $1 million from their boss, the former CEO of the Waffle House.
According to the allegations, they used Waffle House accounts and livestock then to stock their own ranch. And the affidavit says they even stole the soda pop.
Also, Aspen became the first city in the state to ban tobacco sales to anyone under 21.
I think a pretty significant population of the students at Aspen High School are a little bit upset.
Finally, authorities are investigating why so many people got sick at the Rifle Rodeo last week. I have in the studio with me David Krause. He is the editor of the Aspen Times, and Roger Merolt. He is a columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snowmass Sun. We have Olivia Oxenhorn. She's our intern for the summer here at Aspen Public Radio. And we have Randy Essex. He is the editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking with us via Skype. Thanks for joining me today.
Welcome back.
Always fun.
Thanks, Carolyn.
You got it. David, you had a headline in your paper on Thursday morning about a CDOT project that was going to be paving the basically the entrance to Aspen by Castle Creek Bridge.
Right.
And that would have caused a major headache for this month,
yep.
But it sounds like it's being pushed back.
So it sounds like they're going to move it. We don't have an exact date yet, but it's going to be sometime in August. You would like to think that they'll have it done before August 14th, which is D-Day on Highway 82, I would think, with the bridge closing down, right, Randy, for 92 days, 93 days? What are we at?
The target's 95 days.
95, so.
Yeah.
So but, you know.
Time so the skiers can get to Aspen at Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I think, you know, with the S-curve here, the big issue is, as we all know, driving it occasionally is it's basically become a four-wheel drive lane. And, you know, I think we all stay left and then dive in right where it turns to cement, and then dive right back out and get in the left lane. You know, I have a little pattern to it, but it's really become disruptive.
So what is the actual project of the paving? Is it the S-curves, or is it outside before?
So it'll be before, and then as the curve, and they'll take the top 2 inches off and smooth that out. And then also down Main Street by Pepke Park is where they're going to do another project, because I think it's the right lane that's really gotten bad as well. So what they're going to do is just take all that surface off and remill it.
So when was that project going to happen?
June 23rd, 24th, 25th.
Next week.
Yeah, next week, right before the holiday traffic starts coming.
So it will happen in August. So then there's going to be bookend construction or disruption on the road on both ends.
That could be rough.
Yeah, it's going to be rough.
I thought maybe they delayed the construction because of food and wine, but it's not much quieter in the middle of August when they're
no.
trying to move it to that.
No, absolutely not.
It'll be disruptive no matter when.
But meanwhile, the cars will continue to have damage.
Right.
There's that sign that was
right.
put out.
As Tory put out the signs, you know, and it is kind of funny, but it's actually very, it's funny because it's true.
What's the sign?
Help CDOT was one of them. Potholes ahead. You know, just a nice hand drawn. He did a nice artful job. He used two colors and got a little squiggly going. So that was a lot of fun.
Right.
Well, in the last couple of days, they sprayed down that tar with some pea gravel in it.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to like cover up. You can't see where the bumps are anymore, but it doesn't feel any smoother.
No. Is it going smooth in Glenwood Springs as far as the Grand Avenue Bridge, Randy?
Well, it's going as smoothly as it can go for, you know, preparation for a detour around the only way, well, there are two ways across I-70 and the Colorado River here, and they're preparing, they've been repaving Midland Avenue and 8th Street, which will be the core of the detour. There are bridge lane closures, and summer traffic, as you know, is heavy, so there are significant backups. I know that the public safety people, police, EMS, medical, and fire people are meeting to hammer out the best options for them. You know, that's one of the big public concerns is, in slow traffic, will there be the ability to get emergency vehicles to the site of accidents, to the site of heart attacks? You know, what happens if there's a fire and so forth? We met with the bridge team last week, and really there are going to be two gigantic stories going on. One is the traffic, of course, and the other is just the logistics of taking down the old bridge. In addition to closing the bridge, building the remaining portion of the bridge, you can see very well the arc of the bridge now if you come to Glenwood, and how it's going to be completed. They have to haul away all of the material from the existing bridge, which they're going to do over the detour route, and take it out west toward Rifle. So all of that's just an additional logistical challenge.
Yeah.
With summer traffic volumes, I hear from people coming from all directions already that it's just taken a long time to get to Glenwood Springs. The city has come up with additional parking. RAFTA is actually going to create kind of a transit terminal on the north side of the river now, west of the Hot Springs Pool on 6th Street. So the logistical pieces are falling in place, and everybody's holding their breath to see what happens on August 14th.
How does it feel now with construction and the traffic? I mean, now that we've really in the height of it.
So I personally go against the traffic, and I step outside during the day. And often Grand Avenue, as you approach the bridge, is down to one lane because that's needed for moving equipment and just to channel the traffic away from some of the equipment. And the backups are longer. It doesn't visibly look that much different than it does other summers. But there is just an awfully lot of construction activity around town.
What time in the morning do you have to be across the bridge to beat that before it really starts to get backed up?
You know, I've noticed when I've gone down, it's the afternoon that's the bigger issue. Yeah. When you're going down Valley.
And that, you know, that's interesting. I thought that too, but they showed us the traffic spike, and it is actually a higher volume of traffic in a shorter period of time in the morning.
That's interesting. Huh. And Randy, the numbers are they need to reduce traffic 30% to 35% to keep delays to an hour. Is that right?
That's never going to happen.
No.
They say that if they can reduce traffic by a third, the delays will only be 20 minutes to a half an hour, and that if they can't achieve that, that they'll be an hour or more.
Okay.
And that was, CDOT had its target of 20%, and then it said 25%, and then
right.
It had an outside engineering firm look at what was happening, and that's where the 35% figure came from. And traffic keeps increasing, too. Traffic on Grand Avenue has increased each of the last 2 years, which comes with a better economy and more construction activity.
Yeah,
right.
So, sure.
So that means there are going to be a lot of people who, with an hour delay on top of an hour commute each way, they're going to be spending 4 hours a day in their cars for 3 months.
Well, and I think that after the first week, that if employers haven't changed some of their practices, that they will. And the other issue is that the Roaring Fork School District has decided to start school after Labor Day, so 2 weeks or so after the initial bridge closure, then there will be the added logistics of school buses and getting kids back and forth. They're actually going to park buses on one side of the river and escort kids on foot to the other side. So Glenwood Springs Elementary School is on the downtown side, and they'll park it on the north side of the river and walk kids across. And middle school kids who live on the north or on the south side of the river will walk across and then get on buses to go over to the middle school in West Glenwood. Mm-hmm. It's really a remarkable logistical feat, just what they have planned. So the question, of course, is how well it will work, and then what happens if there's an accident or a car stalls or something like that.
As a segue, another form of transportation is on the river. And Randy, you've had headlines in your paper, and David, you have too. And we did a story earlier this week about Twin Lakes is full. So they're going to be releasing even more water into the Roaring Fork than normal. And with the peak spring runoff happening probably today or this weekend, the levels are going way up. And Randy, I know that the Glenwood Post Independent, which then the Aspen Times carried, the story about the rafters who got hung up down just outside of Carbondale. The water was moving so fast that they couldn't get river left and just slammed right into, you know, a bunch of...
That was a very lucky group. There were 9 people in that raft, including 2 children.
Yeah.
And they got stranded on this island / log jam in the middle of the river for three and a half hours. And it's just really darn lucky that nobody tumbled out of that raft, that a child wasn't hurt and so forth. And again, underscoring the necessity to take the river seriously, especially this time of year.
And I think Friday is when, Thursday and Friday is really when people are going to see it. So by, you know, this morning, I think you're going to hear it louder. You're going to see it if you have a spot in the river that you stare at every day, and you're going to see the rise levels. But humming down this weekend and next weekend, you know, I've told my crew to be ready because, you know, the same day as the raft thing, we had a thing up at, was it Slaughterhouse?
Yeah.
And the guy got out.
It was Stein Park.
Yeah. And, you know, he got out. He got lucky, but it was the same day. And you just, man, it is running crazy right now.
Yeah.
So what do you do for, what advice would you give for commercial customers for rafting trips and whatnot? Most of the time, they are at fault. Usually, it sounds like pilot error where they get into trouble.
I mean, that's typically what it is, And you enter at your own risk there.
I guess you have to just believe it's not like a Disneyland ride where it's way controlled. And
it's not.
It's a dangerous thing to do.
As a river runner,
yeah,
I will even stay away this weekend. But, you know, that's the thing that people need to remember is that the Roaring Fork is a cold river, too. Like, hypothermia can set in quickly.
And then you can't swim, right?
Right.
That's the danger.
I mean, there's been a couple fatalities in the last couple of years, and it's been heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, once they've been back in the boat, they haven't been able to recover.
Yeah.
So just, you know, everybody be careful. Swift Water Rescue we have great, you know, we just did a story earlier this week about Mountain Rescue Aspen getting accreditation for being one of the best rescue organizations in the country.
Yeah.
And so we've got good people standing by, but let's let them stay at home.
Well, that's right. You can't just shut off the water and walk away from it. You've got to wait it out.
Right.
Well, and up here the numbers, and that's, you know, what people have to remember when you get these confluences. Up here it's running at 1,000, right, CFS, which is a pretty good, that's the big number it'll be this weekend. But down by Randy in Glenwood, by then, when you get the crystal coming in and the pan and all that, you're running 5,000, you know, that's crazy fast.
It is.
So
it is. That was David Krauss, editor of the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin, and you are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We continue our conversation with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking via Skype, Roger Merolt, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snowmass Sun, and Olivia Oxenhorn, Aspen Public Radio's summer intern. Randy, we all did a story, all the media outlets and the Valley on Thursday about a massive embezzlement case with the Waffle House CEO's ranch. What do you know?
Yeah, it was according to the investigation, a very long-term deal. This couple was the ranch manager for 25 years. And the investigation really focused on since 2012 when the ranch was put up for sale. It was used for Waffle House retreats and management events and so forth. And
imagine the breakfasts at those retreats.
Exactly.
Sorry, Randy, I tried, but
and,
I just...
and it, I guess Waffle House got too big for it, but they kept the couple on. The couple was on the Waffle House payroll. The couple got Waffle House stock. And according to the allegations, they used Waffle House accounts and livestock then to stock their own ranch. And, you know, I, having spent my career in Metro News, it was kind of delightful to have a story that included horse theft and cattle rustling. And the affidavit says they even stole the soda pop.
Right, which, allegedly.
Which is just pretty amazing.
You know, I have to say that having covered crime here for 20 years, embezzlement is one that's always there.
It's rampant.
It is.
It's rampant.
It's too easy for people. It's just, it's right in front of them, you know, and people who aren't paying attention, second homeowners, whatnot.
Lots of cash, lots of money.
Yep.
It's amazing. I see it in my side of the accounting business. We deal with it all the time. And I'd say most cases do not get reported because there's nothing left to recover for starters. Number two, it's very embarrassing to the people who are the victims, and it's everywhere. So if you have a small business out there, be careful. It's a real danger.
Or a big business, right?
Or a big business.
I mean, right under your own nose. That's the crazy part about this. It's that whole trust thing, right? Trying to find somebody who you trust to take care of your property and take care of your land. And like Randy said, over 25 years, you would think, you know, you can trust these people. But in the end, they just were, you know, up to $1 million, right? And like the horses and the cattle and, you know, the soda pops. But 25 years they've been doing that, they think.
Yeah.
Well, we just had our third county recorder's office embezzler sentenced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to bring
this
up.
This one was actually caught after the county instituted safeguards that were put in place after the first two cases. So I guess that's a good sign. And then, you know, there are 600 nonprofits between Parachute and Aspen. Some are run well, some are not. Our Youth Zone monthly community column was just about, you know, how to check on the nonprofit before you give your money, which is another cautionary point. You know, if you're running your business, you have to be careful, and it's hard to find people who have the credentials and experience and who you can trust. And then if you're donating to or involved with a nonprofit, same thing.
Well, you want to give us an update on the Glenwood Springs Center for the Arts. I'm not suggesting that there was embezzlement because it's under investigation and we're not sure. We aired a story on Thursday morning that's just more of the human side of what's going on with this nonprofit and the teachers who haven't been paid because there's, you know, financial problems with that nonprofit now, and the funding from the city of Glenwood Springs has been cut off while they investigate where the money went.
Yeah, Carolyn, the city council is scheduled to talk about the Art Center on Thursday night, so we'll probably get a little bit of fresh information. I have heard that it's going to be probably two or three more weeks before the investigation is complete. And depending on what that finds, it may be another two or three weeks after that before we know the resolution of it, if it's referred to other authorities.
Moving on to Aspen news. The Aspen City Council went ahead and did what they do often, which is be first in something, and symbolic move in becoming the first city in the state to outlaw tobacco sales for
18 to 21.
Right.
You have to be 21 now.
Mm-hmm. It was 18.
Yep.
And now it's 21. Can you talk about that a little bit, David, and give us the...
Well, I think the issue more than anything is the healthy city aspect of it, frankly, and trying to get it away from, you know, it's that debate once you're 18 and you can, you know, be drafted or go to war or be enlisted or sign up, you know, should you be able to smoke? But there's the other side of the health side of it, right? It's close to me. I lost my dad to heart attacks. He smoked 2 packs a day. He was a 1950s kid and probably started smoking when he was 12 or 13. So
I did.
You know?
Yeah, I did. My dad was a smoker as well.
Right. And yeah, so when you have that in your family, you know, I don't have, you know, we have 2 teenagers and we, you know, you tell the kids it's, you make your own decisions, but take a look at what happened to your family in the past, and that should be a good indicator. And I think anybody who has that, and now, granted, they can still, you know, have their cigarettes and all that. It's just buying it, right? So that's the issue. That's the difference is, you know, they can still sit around and smoke cigarettes and have that. They just can't go in the store and buy them until they're 21.
It's just making it a little bit more difficult.
Right, putting up another roadblock.
Yeah. So they can just go down to Aspen Village and buy them now.
Right. Right. Yeah. But well, you know what? Any roadblock to me on something like this is a good roadblock.
Well, it's symbolic. I agree. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was a silly article or silly letter in the paper today. I thought someone said, well, you know, if you raise it to 21, then everybody who's selling cigarettes, we're going to lose out on all that sales tax that could go for good things. And his argument was, well, the kids are going to get them anyway. So I'm thinking, well, if the kids are going to get them anyways, I got to buy them somewhere. So they're still the same amount of sales tax being
right.
raised.
I mean, the sales tax number, I think, is 75,000 yeah. is what we reported.
Yeah,
so
which the city of Aspen's wealthy enough that they don't care
that's
about
nothing
that
compared to health of everybody.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, Olivia, we were discussing yesterday about, you know, your peers. You just graduated from Aspen High School. There's plenty of people who still smoke at that age.
Yeah, I would say that there definitely are, not everyone, but there's a good portion of people who do. And I think more than cigarettes, it's the vape devices like Vuse that kids are really into now at high school. And I think a pretty significant population of the students at Aspen High School are a little bit upset. I mean, obviously, as you pointed out, they're still going to be able to get them if they just drive down Valley a little bit. But they were so easily accessible before, you know, you get in the car, drive 5 minutes to Shell, uh-huh. go pick up your cigarettes or your Vuse. And I think the upcoming seniors especially are pretty upset that that's not going to be available for them anymore.
Right.
Well, the good news is we're talking about it. So if nothing else, the change in the law has got parents and hopefully students talking about it and the real health issues behind it.
Yeah. Now, this is part of an initiative that was brought forward by our public health officer, who's a MD in town, Kim Levin. And it's an initiative that's nationwide called Tobacco 21. And they're going to, you know, local governments to try to get people to do this or, you know, governing bodies. Randy, have you seen this come across the Glenwood Springs City Council or anywhere in your jurisdictions?
It has not.
Okay. But the city council, didn't they do something with banning smoking?
They banned
downtown?
Smoking in the downtown, core downtown area that's frequented by tourists. And I think there have been some tickets issued, but it's poorly enforced.
It is.
I think there's one sign up.
And that's been about a year, right?
It has.
Yeah. And there's still, I mean, you can see cigarette butts all over the sidewalk along by where your office is, outside of bars and whatnot. Definitely.
And it may be because some pedestrian freedom of movement is restricted by the construction fences, but I honestly think there's more smoking since they approved that.
Everybody's stressing out about the construction traffic.
Whatever you resist, persists. That was David Krauss, editor of the Aspen Times, and Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snowmass Sun. And I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now continue our conversation with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, and Olivia Oxenhorn, Aspen Public Radio summer intern. Food and Wine is this weekend in Aspen, and lots of festivals are being planned. And Randy, you had a story in your paper, I think it was, several days ago, about a bunch of people being sick from the rodeo in Rifle?
The Rifle Rodeo had its kickoff night for the season on June 5th, and the county said that dozens of people reported becoming ill, gastrointestinal ailment. The state is helping investigate exactly what the source is, so the county hasn't yet said that it's foodborne, but it's ruled out waterborne, airborne, something passed from person to person. And on our Facebook page, people reported eating pulled pork sandwiches. So because there are so many festivals coming up, I'm thinking more like Mountain Fair and Strawberry Days, not Food and Wine.
Hopefully they've got that nailed down.
Find out what the correct procedure is, because the state just a couple of years ago kicked food inspections back to the local level. And what we learned was that unless it's a cottage food thing or a nonprofit event, that you have to apply for a license and that your food truck, food booth is supposed to be inspected. And even though this event was at the county fairgrounds, which is sort of ironic, the county said it did not know that there would be food served there. So assuming this is food poisoning, which I don't think is too wildly speculative, something improper happened there. But then we checked on the procedures, and like Strawberry Days this weekend in Glenwood Springs, they're very strict. The food vendors apply for their license 2 weeks in advance, and then on the day it kicks off, the inspectors come and make sure there's a hand washing station and check the temperatures that the food's kept at and all this sort of thing. So that's the standard procedure. And I guess that from a consumer perspective, if you go to a festival, that you ought to just keep your eyes open and be sure that everything appears to be on the up and up. We didn't ask. I don't know if there's a certificate that's supposed to be displayed, but about everybody knows this procedure, so this was an anomaly.
Well, who's running the rodeo? I mean, can anybody just go up there and set up a booth and nobody notices that they didn't ask anybody, or they're just serving out of the back of their car?
That's a fair question. There's a Rifle Rodeo Association that puts this on, and they didn't want to talk to us for some reason.
Wild
that
West.
Sounds a little fishy, if you ask me, right?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
It wasn't fish.
I mean, the city of Aspen, its environmental health department is what checks local restaurants here. And there is no grading system. Like, you don't put a letter in your window like California or other states. But
you couldn't sneak into Food and Wine or the Labor Day Festival and just start selling food.
No, you could not. And like Randy said, I mean, but maybe Mountain Fair. I mean,
maybe anything goes on there,
right?
No, I know. Actually, we have a staffer who volunteers for a booth at Mountain Fair, and he said that was kind of part of the impetus for our follow-up story. He said, you know, the inspectors come on the day it opens and they check everything over really closely.
Okay. Well, good. Just as a point of caution, you should probably inspect your food before you eat it or buy it anyway. But you never know where it's coming from.
Right. That's true.
I always get worried when people bring things here to the station, like cookies or whatever. I'm like, what's your kitchen look like?
Really? You know?
Like, how clean
really?
Is it? Really? Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're good there. So appreciate the time and have a good weekend.
You too, Kelly.
Nice to talk. Thanks.
Thanks.
That was Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking via Skype. Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Sonoma Sun. David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times. And Olivia Oxenhorn, Aspen Public Radio's summer intern. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.